All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a case, a Supreme Court case, and it's one that's pretty pivotal if you're into corporate law or just, you know, thinking about how companies are held accountable. The case is Lawson v. FMR LLC.
Yep, Lawson, big one.
Yeah, and it basically reshaped how we look at whistleblower protections. What's really interesting, and I think especially relevant for you, our listener, is how this ruling digs into the, well, kind of the messy reality of how companies are structured these days, especially when you've got public companies working hand in hand with private contractors. And who's actually protecting the employees in those situations, right?
Yeah.
Right. And for everyone listening who's maybe not super familiar with the nitty-gritty, the core question that Lawson tries to answer is this. Does the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, you know, that big law that came after all those corporate scandals, does it actually protect employees of private companies if those companies are doing work for public firms? You won't think, okay, kind of specific, but it really matters. Think mutual funds. That whole industry relies on this relationship between public funds and the private companies that manage them.
Okay, so let's back up a sec. I think to really understand why this ended up at the Supreme Court, we need to, like, picture the players, right? So we've got Jackie Lawson and Jonathan Zhang. They worked for FMR, a private company. Now, FMR's whole thing was managing mutual funds, which, as you probably know, those are public companies. So Lawson and Zhang, they reported what they thought was accounting fraud tied to these funds that FMR was managing and claimed that, because they spoke up, they faced retaliation. So they decided to sue, and they based their case on Sarbanes-Oxley's whistleblower protection of provision. Specifically, Section 1514A, that's the part of the law that's supposed to shield people who report corporate bad behavior.
Yeah, that's the one. And you know, initially, the lower court was on their side. They said, yeah, these protections, they should apply to Lawson and Zhang. But then the case goes up to the First Circuit Court of Appeals, and they saw it differently.
Oh.
Yeah, they took a much narrower view of Sarbanes-Oxley, saying that, nope, it only protects employees who are directly working for the public company.
Ah, so that created, like, a conflict in the courts, right? Like, different parts of the system were interpreting this law in totally opposite ways. No wonder the Supreme Court stepped in. They needed to settle this for everybody.
Exactly. Someone had to give a definitive answer. And this is where it gets really interesting for anyone following along, because, I mean, the question in front of the Supreme Court was huge. Does this section, 1514A of Sarbanes-Oxley, does it protect employees of these private contractors from retaliation if they blow the whistle on something shady happening at the public company they're working with? And like you said before, the court's decision, it was a big win for whistleblowers.
It was. So let's break down how they got to that decision, starting with, I guess, the majority opinion, right? Like, what was their main line of reasoning?
So the majority, they really hung their hat on the actual language of the law. They honed in on the phrase an employee in Section 1514A, and their logic was pretty straightforward, I think. They said, look, the law doesn't say an employee of a public company, right? It just says an employee. And not only that, but the fact that the law mentions contractors at all kind of suggests that Congress, when they wrote this, they meant to cover the employees of those contractors too.
It does seem, I don't know, kind of obvious when you put it that way. Like, if lawmakers wanted to restrict those protections, they would have been a lot more specific, right? Employee of a public company. Case closed. But they didn't do that. The fact that contractors are even in there, it does make the whole thing seem broader, more inclusive.
Exactly. But, and this is important, the court didn't just stop at looking at the words themselves. They also took into account the whole context, the why behind Sarbanes-Oxley in the first place. I mean, we have to remember, this law, it was a direct response to those massive corporate scandals, Enron, WorldCom, Congress. They wanted to make companies more accountable, more transparent, not just for investors, but for everyone, right?
Right. And when you say Enron, it's not just Enron alone, is it? It's their partners, too. I'm thinking Arthur Andersen, their accounting firm. They were in deep. And for you following along, this is a good example of how sometimes the people who know the most about whether a public company is healthy or not, they're not even working directly for that company.
100%. And Arthur Andersen, they were a contractor. Their employees, they were in the perfect position to see those, you know, those financial warning signs. And the court really emphasized that Congress wanted to empower those insiders, including the ones working for contractors, to report anything fishy without being scared of losing their jobs. There's this quote from the decision that I think really sums it up. Congress installed whistleblower protection to ward off another Enron. Contractor employees are often the only witnesses to fraud.
Wow. That's pretty powerful. And it makes sense if the goal was to prevent another Enron to protect investors, you got to protect the people who are often the first to see the cracks, right?
Mm.
Doesn't matter if they're on the public company's payroll or working for a contractor.
Mm.
Right. And the court, they also looked to, I guess you could say, precedent. They looked at other laws for guidance, and they specifically made a comparison to the Wendell H. Ford Aviation Investment and Reform Act, AR 21, it's often called. This was an earlier law that also had whistleblower protections, and it was super clear that those protections, they applied to contractor employees in the airline industry. So the court was saying, look, AR 21 uses pretty much the same language as Sarbanes-Oxley, and employees should probably mean the same thing in both laws. Makes sense.
Yeah, consistency. So earlier you mentioned the practical implications of this whole thing, especially for the mutual fund industry. Can you unpack that a little more? Like, why would a narrow reading of this law, why would that have been a problem, especially for, I don't know, like everyday people who invest in mutual funds?
So the mutual fund world, it's structured kind of uniquely, right? Usually these public mutual funds, they don't have employees who are directly managing those investments or even handling the day-to-day stuff. Instead, they contract those key functions out to private companies. So you've got investment management, administration, distribution, all that's done by contractors.
Wow.
So if Sarbanes-Oxley's whistleblower protections only applied to employees of the actual public fund, it would basically create this like huge loophole. Almost the entire industry wouldn't have this, you know, crucial layer of protection. It'd be wide open for potential problems. It's not like your typical company where the employees are all in-house doing the work. These public funds, they're basically hiring other companies, private ones, to run the show.
So if they'd gone with that narrow interpretation, practically no one in the mutual fund industry would have felt safe blowing the whistle, right? That's a pretty big deal. Shows how important the Supreme Court's broader reading of this was.
Absolutely. The court, they understood this. They knew a narrow interpretation would totally undermine what Sarbanes-Oxley was trying to do, especially in a sector of the economy that's so important. It would have affected investors like you in a real way.
It would have. Okay, so like with most Supreme Court cases, there were some different opinions, right?
Yeah.
Justice Scalia, he was known for being a real stickler for the exact wording of the law. Textualism, they call it. He wrote a concurring opinion. What was his take?
So Scalia, he agreed with the majority's conclusion. You know, he agreed that those whistleblower protections should extend to contractor employees. But famously, he didn't like how they relied on legislative history. You know, all those records of what Congress was thinking when they wrote the law. For Scalia, a hardcore textualist, meaning he pretty much only cares about the literal dictionary definition of the words in the law, the phrase an employee was clear enough on its own, didn't need anything else. So he got to the same outcome, but his reasoning was all about the text, just the text. No need to try and figure out what Congress intended beyond what they actually wrote down.
That's so Scalia. Stick to the words and it should be clear for everyone. But then we have Justice Sotomayor. She wrote a dissenting opinion. What were her concerns?
So Sotomayor, along with Kennedy and Alito, they worried about what she called absurd results from this broad interpretation. And she gave a pretty vivid example. She said, imagine a housekeeper working in the home of a CEO of a public company. Under this ruling, they could potentially be covered by Sarbanes-Oxley.
Really?
Yeah, if they happen to, like, overhear something about financial wrongdoing, they could be protected as whistleblowers. Sotomayor argued that the law's headings and the overall context, it all pointed to the idea that Sarbanes-Oxley was meant to target the public companies themselves and those directly involved with their finances. She thought the majority took it too far, way too far, you know, that it could end up including situations that have nothing to do with protecting investors.
Yeah, I see her point. So it's this tension between wanting to protect whistleblowers as much as possible and worrying about the law reaching way further than it should. And the Supreme Court, they went with the broader interpretation, right? They really wanted to empower people to speak up, even if they aren't working for the public company directly.
Right. It's a tough balance. And ultimately, they landed on the side of saying, let's make sure people feel safe to come forward. Okay, but let's zoom out for a minute. Big picture time. What is this ruling, Lawson? What does it really mean? What are the key takeaways for, well, for everyone, but especially for law students? You guys are going to be dealing with this stuff.
Yeah, what should they be paying attention to?
This ruling, it blew open the scope of whistleblower protection under Sarbanes-Oxley. We're talking potentially millions of people who work for contractors across so many industries that work with public companies. And it's not just finance, right? Think tech companies that provide services to banks, healthcare companies managing patient data for hospitals, manufacturing companies making parts for publicly traded car companies, you name it. Any place where you see public companies relying on outside help, those employees, they're potentially covered now. This case, it has implications for corporate governance everywhere.
It's way bigger than just Wall Street then. That's a huge point. And for you law students out there, what should really stand out about this case as you continue your studies?
I think Lawson v. FMR is like the perfect case study in how to interpret laws. You see this clash between textualism, you know, Scalia's whole thing, where you just focus on the dictionary definition of the words. And then you've got a more purposive approach where the court is trying to figure out what Congress was trying to do, even if the words aren't super clear. And you see how the court wrestles with the idea of unintended consequences, which is Sotomayor's dissent. It's a great lesson in why it's so important to write laws clearly. If the language is vague, you end up with legal battles and different interpretations down the road. It's something you guys are going to see a lot in your careers. Basically, how do courts figure out what a law means when it's not, well, when it's not perfectly obvious?
Absolutely. Laws don't just, like, magically work on their own. They get shaped by these court decisions. And the impact here, it's huge. It could mean more people feeling empowered to come forward with important information about wrongdoing.
Right. And it strengthens the whole system of corporate governance, right? Gives people a way to fight back if they're working for companies that are closely tied to public companies. It's basically saying, look, accountability doesn't stop at the publicly traded company. It goes further. It includes those contractors who are often doing really important work and who might be the ones who see the problems first.
So to wrap up our dive into Lawson v. FMR, it really leaves you with a question. Would a scandal as big as Enron have happened if employees at companies like Arthur Andersen had felt safe speaking up? And without worrying about losing their jobs, Lawson tries to make sure that anyone working for a contractor, anyone who might be a whistleblower, feels that sense of security. It's a powerful reminder of how these legal decisions can have a real impact on how companies behave and how we hold them accountable.
For sure. A lot to think about.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
It's been great.
And we'll be back with another deep dive soon. See ya.